Welcome back. This is yet another episode of Inside Bassmaster. This is your cute, cuddly host with the most, Thomas Allen, coming to you solo, direct from the comfortable plush studios atop the Bassmaster Towers overlooking downtown Birmingham. It's a beautiful evening. The rain here has finally quit. And we're going to talk about the Bassmaster Elite Series tonight. But before we do, I want to mention a couple things. Later this week, I know if you download this in 2 weeks, that's going to be old and irrelevant, but we're going to mention this anyway. We're going to change things up a little bit. We're actually going to get James Hall and Helen White on the line, and we're going to talk about the 100 Best Bass Lakes, which will be coming out in the upcoming issue of Bassmaster Magazine. It's one of our most popular, most exciting articles of the year, where we go through America's 100 Best Bass Lakes and rank them based on survey data and tournament information, all kinds of good stuff, but it's going to be pretty surprising. A lot of things have changed, and we have some interesting perspectives on how the Bassmaster Top 100 Lakes actually impacts those fisheries. It's arguable either way. It's going to be a fun discussion, and we're going to get into that later this week, so make sure you check that out. We're closing in on July, and this means one thing to those of us that know the season shift. The Northern Swing on the Bassmaster Elite Series is about to take place, and as we get into July... we've got some events going on there. ICAST is something that we all like and have a lot of fun with, where we talk about new products. We maybe do something about that after that event takes place, but we're really excited to go to New York, where we're going to be visiting Waddington, New York, one of our favorite destinations on the Elite Series, and that is going to be the Hook Bassmaster Elite at St. Lawrence, presented by Go RVing. That's going to be July 20 through the 23rd. And this is going to be a back-to-back event. So as soon as the anglers are done, if they don't make the top 50 cut, they're able to slide over, drive a couple hours east towards Lake Champlain. And that's going to be July 27th through the 30th, immediately following St. Lawrence, the Bassmaster Elite at Champlain, presented by Dick Cepec Tires and Wheels. So we've got we're going to end July with a bang. We start out with the 4th, which is a big bang. We go to ICAST, which is awesome, and we got two Elite Series events here in 2017 to wrap up the July month of fishing this year. And you know, it's kind of sad, but that's going to leave one regular season event to take place in August before we move over to Minnesota for the Angler of the Year and a Classic Bracket Challenge. So we're 6 in the hole, not counting the Classic, 3 regular season events to go, and there's a lot on the line for a bulk of the field. That might mean Angler of the Year points. That might mean making a Classic berth in 2018 when we go back to Lake Hartwell, or it just might mean making some checks so that you know, you can pay your bills, and that's a whole side of this game that we love. These guys have a lot riding on their appearances and how they fish, so they put it all on the line at every single event. So we're going to talk about the St. Lawrence River event. This is something I'm very excited about. I love going north. I love smallmouth bass fishing. And it's just going to be one of those things that you aren't going to forget. I bet this is going to be one for the books. Looking at the 10-day forecast, you can't trust anything past tomorrow. But if you're looking at that and look at Waddington, you're looking at highs in the mid to upper 70s, lows in the 60s. And it's probably going to get a touch warmer as we get closer to the event. But it is that time of year where you can probably... get by wearing a hoodie in the morning and shorts in the afternoon, and dry, sunny, typically. I say that, and it could be soaking wet like it has been here recently up in that part of the nation, but it's going to be an exciting event. Joining me on the phone are the brilliant minds behind the Bassmaster Fantasy Fishing Pundit stories that we love to publish every year, and we've been holding off on St. Lawrence because we had such a break. We had such a little bit of time off here that... You know, we really wanted to dig into this. So before we get into Angler of the Year and Rookie of the Year, which will be later, we're going to get into what these guys think. And joining me on the phone, Coy Greathouse, Ronnie Moore, and the man himself, Pete Robbins. So I'm going to start with Pete. Look, we have a lot of fun when we go up north and fish for smallmouth. But this is really the time of year where you see anglers who may not have done as well in the Southern Lakes have an opportunity to turn their season around, and I'm sure that your picks are going to reflect that. So going right into fantasy fishing, talk to me about who you got slated for this next event.
Well, I'm not sure if it was on purpose or inadvertent, but I kind of went with the Coy Greathouse strategy on this one. I chose guys lower ownership percentages. My average ownership percentage among my five guys is about 5%. And that starts with someone who I was surprised to see have a very low ownership percentage, Edwin Evers. About 7% of fantasy players have picked him.
Yeah.
Evers has won at the St. Lawrence before. He's always a threat in the drop shot type lakes. He got a check the other time when they went in 2013. And he's a guy who's up there. We haven't heard all that much about him. He's in ninth in the Angler of the Year race right now. And I don't know that he's a dark horse to win because there's a lot of really strong horses ahead of him, but it would surprise no one if he did manage. And that's kind of one of the interesting things about these northern lakes, and in particular the St. Lawrence. You always look for local anglers to have something of an advantage, but there are two groups of anglers who seem to do well up north who aren't from the north, and that's Florida anglers and Arizona anglers. If you look at past St. Lawrence tournaments, Clifford Perch has done well. Josh Bertrand has done well. Former Elite Series angler Kevin Hawk, who's not from Arizona, but from that general part of the country, the desert southwest, has done well. So I feel very comfortable picking Clifford and Bucket B. Bucket C, I'm not going to go too far into this, but we've discussed it at length. I'm going back on the Steve Kennedy train. I fell off it for a while, and it made me pay big time.
Yes.
I would love to see Kennedy do well. He's done well up there before, made the money both times, including a seventh-place finish in 2013. And, you know, despite him having a very notable year with the Classic and then with his Elite Series win, he's still pretty far down in the Elite Series standings. I think he's 51st right now. So if he wants to get back to the Classic and have put on another show like he did at Conroe, he better make something happen awfully fast. Bucket D is another one of those weird geographic quirks. In addition to the Arizona guys doing well, the guys who are sort of from the total opposite sorts of waters, the weedy waters of Florida, say that 10 times fast, seem to do well in New York. And one of those guys who does extremely well in New York who's having a tough season is Bernie Schultz, 3.3% ownership. He's done really well in the past at the St. Lawrence. He had a decent tournament at Dardanelle after a tough beginning to the season, and I look for him to make a move here. Bucket E, this is a tough one. There are a lot of good anglers in Bucket E. I'm going with a total wild guess on this one. Marizo Shimizu, who's had a terrible season. I don't know if he's in danger of not requalifying for the elites based on his rolling average, but he's way down near the bottom of the standings right now, and if he's going to salvage his season in any way and get out of that triple digits, he needs to have a good one here at the St. Lawrence. So with only 2.2% ownership, I think that's a gamble worth taking.
You know, Pete, you mentioned something that Bucket E is definitely pretty complicated, and it seems to get later in the season. The trends and the habitual, you know, they're starting to come through. You know, you see guys that end up there in the beginning of the season that maybe don't belong. They work their way out of the hole. But why do you suppose Bucket E becomes so much more difficult as we get later in the season?
Historically, I think it becomes difficult because you have a lot of rookies and guys who don't have long track records. But this year, Bucket E is kind of an outlier. We have Chris Zaldane there. Shaw Grigsby is there. Takahiro Omori. We have someone like, I believe, Chad Pipkins is in there, who was injured at the beginning of the season, but we all expect him to do real well up north. It's really tough to pick right now. You can see you have a lot of previous Elite Series winners there, Britt Myers, Paul Elias. The trends of the past where the guys in E were guys who were not going to make it more than one season on the Elite Series, that's over. It's very possible if you, to borrow the uncomfortable phrase, if you zig when you should have zagged a few times in the course of the season to find yourself in Bucket E versus Bucket B or C.
Well, Bucket E definitely has some interesting stuff going on. In fact, we should mention this again, that if you're in Bucket E, if an angler's in Bucket E, he doesn't necessarily run the risk of being cut, because what they do is they take your all of your seasons as an Elite Series pro, they drop out the worst one, and that average, wherever that places you, you are then staggered down. And unfortunately, there are probably going to be some shattered dreams this year, and we look at this list and there's guys, you know, that don't belong here, that and Marizo being one of those that could be in risk of losing his Elite Series position. But there's two trains of thought there. It's good for the incoming young crop of anglers or new crop of anglers that are working their way through the opens. It's going to provide opportunities for fresh blood. But on the flip side, you have guys that maybe just be enduring a long stretch of tough tournaments, 2-3 years worth, and you don't want to see them get out or be cut too soon, but, you know, it's a top level of the game, and you're going to have that type of turnover to keep things fresh. So scooting over to Coy, this is always so much fun for me because he, like he said last time, I see him sitting at some coffee shop with a black marker in his mouth, and then on the other hand, a yellow highlighter, and he's got marker marks all over his face and books spread all over the table. You know he's putting some deep thought into this. So, Coy, prove me right again and make your move into the top 10%.
Absolutely. So I'm close. I'm 4% away from the top 10%. I'm in the red on the little ticker there for fantasy fishing. And if you read my fantasy book for this week, there's a lot of information here. So it's probably the longest, maybe not the longest, but it's pretty close to the longest pundit article that I've written. So I'm actually, it's funny that Pete is on board with my strategy because I'm kind of in the same bucket as him as far as my picks for this week. We have a lot of similarities, which I think, Pete, I think that's a good thing. I think you're choosing wisely, and you and I will be on top at the end of this event. So if everything goes the way we expect. So looking forward to that. Bucket A, man, I am so glad that Kevin Van Dam and Brandon Palahniuk are doing so well because they are sucking up almost 60% of the ownership in this bucket and makes it really, really easy to pick Edwin Evers. Edwin Evers is, like Pete said, 7% owned. That's absolutely insane. He's won there. He is his last five events. They're all 24th place or better in the last five events. And he's only missed one check this season at Cherokee. He was 56th. So, I mean, that screams consistency that he's going to catch fish. He loves fishing on the St. Lawrence River. He can find those big fish. Last time, in 2015, he was sight fishing for these little kind of boulders and just random rock piles. So I fully expect him to find those kind of things that are a little bit more outside the norm and put up some good weights. My backup pick, and actually calling him my flip-flop pick this week, so that way Ronnie doesn't give me a hard time for changing my picks the last second, because I have been known to do that occasionally, but it's always somebody who I talked about in my article, at least. So there is some consistency there. Brandon Palahniuk, again, he's 20% owned, he's pretty rich, but he is close to AOI, the top of the AOI. He's won there on the St. Lawrence River. He's, I think, top 12, I think, the next time, or maybe 12th place, 13th place, somewhere in there. He is killer when it comes to smallmouth tournaments. And I fully expect him to be in the top. I think Edwin Evers is just too much of a bargain here to pass up. Bucket B, the one guy that I think has been looking forward to the Northern Swing more than anybody else is Seth Fider. I think he won last year. It was kind of one of those wins where, you know, it was good to win, but it didn't have the same hit as like a normal regular season Elite Series victory. So to have him go back up there and just smack some smallmouth around and catch some giant bags in order to do well and maybe win one of these Northern Swing events, I think he's ready and he's on fire. Last time, let's see, 2013, he wasn't in the Elite Series. 2015, he got 12th at St. Lawrence. He was relatively unknown in 2015. So, there's just no way that he can do any worse than at least cutting a check. And there's a really good chance he's going to be way up there. Josh Bertrand, he's kind of a funny thought. The last two times we were there, he did really well. He got 8th and 11th, but he was fishing in the same exact spot both tournaments, 2 years apart, catching fish in the same area. So chances of that happening again are unlikely, but you never know. It's kind of one of those gamble type things where he might happen to find those fish in the same spot again. You never know. It is 2 years later. So, but I don't know if locals come in and wipe it out or mess it up, but it should have rested. And if they're there, he may be able to find them again. So Bucket C, this is a genius pick. Can't believe that he's low owned right now. And that's Alton Jones. Alton Jones, first year around, did not do very well at St. Lawrence. He did not. I don't think he cashed a check, but he stuck around for like a week after the event was over with his son, and he was determined to figure out how to catch those smallmouth in the river. And 2 years later, posted a second place finish. So he is 5.6% owned. He loves smallmouth. He's had over a dozen top tens on similar fisheries. Loves the smallmouth for some reason. Well, he lives pretty close to Belton Lake, which is one of the only lakes in Texas. There's only a handful that have smallmouth, and it's got really good smallmouth. And I know that he fishes there pretty frequently. So he enjoys those smallmouth a lot, and he's going to do really well here. Backup pick, Jacob Prosnick. Anytime you have a smallmouth tournament, he is he's in the mix. He's not posted a 20th or worse on any smallmouth dominated Elite Series event. He's fifth in 2015. Pretty certainly going to be in the top 20. And he is he's almost 20% down, so he's pretty expensive. That's why I'm sticking with Elton Jones. I just think he's too much of a bargain as well. But the thing about Elton Jones is he's kind of right on that AOI cut, right on the classic cut. Not AOI cut, but he's right on the classic bubble, and he wants to get up there. So he's got a lot of motivation and incentive to kick it into high gear. So expect a strong finish. Bernie Schultz, again, Florida angler. You would not think that he would be good at smallmouth, but he has got something weird, some kind of weird connection with smallmouth. It seems like every time they go to these northern swings, he ends up showing up. And he's fishing shallow both times, 2013, 2015. He was fishing shallow, which is not something most of the field is going to do for these smallmouth. So he's going to have them pretty well to himself, and I expect him to find some. There's also a really good population of largemouth out there. There's good grass. There's good lily pads. Greg Hackney posted a really high finish in 2015, fishing shallow. He's catching 100 bass a day and ended up catching, you know, that 18 to 19 pounds a day, and it got him really high up there. Brandon Card is my flip-flop pick here in Bucket D. And similar to Bernie Schultz, he's good in shallow water, muddy water, but he is going to be on those shallow water largemouth in there in the grass. He did really well in 2015, so I expect him to be in there. And those largemouth are just going to be overlooked. They're going to be untouched virtually. So everybody's going to be out there fishing for smallmouth, which, don't get me wrong, smallmouth are going to win this event without a doubt. But if you want to finish high, get really good points, which is in a lot of these guys' minds, finding those largemouth is going to be a player. Bucket E, Chad Pipkins, he's done really well there the last several times we've been there. We've got a 10th in 2013, 32nd in 2015. He's doing really poorly this year, like everybody else in Bucket E. He's really struggling. This is going to be an event that's up his sleeve, and I think he will finish high. He's my only high percentage owned guy right now, and he is sitting at 21% ownership, which is, it's pretty tough to pick him, but there's not a whole lot of guys that I'm just real confident in this bucket. My flip-flop pick is Marizo Shimizu. He has 24th place in both this tournament, or 2015 and 2013. Really good with a spinning rod. Again, he's not a bad pick at all. I think he, you know, Pete, you've seen like maybe he was kind of a stretch, but I think he's a really smart pick. Classic's out of reach at this point, so just getting in there, trying to get a good finish, make a paycheck, I think that's going to be on his mind. So it could be a really good safe pick to just cash, get above the average, and get you some good points for fantasy fishing. So that's the lineup. It's going to be an interesting event.
It's going to be interesting, and you definitely made some good points. I feel like you and Pete have joined forces to take the rest of us down, which I would say that I joined forces with Ronnie Moore, but at the last tournament, I'm a little skeptical to even hear what he has coming up. But hey, you got to understand that things can change even for a fantasy fishing player in one tournament. I mean, if you happen to get three or four guys in the top 50 or even the top 20, or there have been tournaments where I've had three guys in the top 12. I mean, you can earn some massive points that way and run away with it. And I am a little concerned with how similar your rosters are. You guys are clearly working on something here, and that's fine. So now Ronnie Moore was is bright, young, and intelligent, and good at everything that he is. Was a little behind this week on getting me his story. So if you haven't read it yet, that's because we haven't posted it yet. So what you're about to hear from Ronnie is fresh and has not been revealed to the bass fishing public yet. So Ronnie, let's hear about it. What does your roster look like? Hopefully, better than last time.
Well, to be honest, I can't get much worse than last time, so I'm super hopeful for the St. Lawrence River. But I respect Pete and Coy's picks. I think they're very good picks, and I think that, you know, you guys have me underrated right now. You know, you guys are counting me out because I slipped up, but I'm used to chasing the top of the leaderboard, so I'm excited for this last stretch going to smallmouth country, try to chase you guys down. But one interesting pick to start my lineup for the St. Lawrence is I'm going to try to chase you guys down with an Alabama angler leading off the group, Jordan Lee. Obviously, we talk about him every show, it seems, and how good he does. He does it well everywhere, whether it's fishing deep, fishing shallow, across the country, or in his backyard. But I never hardly hear anyone actually picking him. We always praise him, but we never pick him. And I think that for me to gain some confidence in Bucket A, I feel like Bucket A is always my trip-up bucket, and I always pick someone who bombs. Like, I picked Dustin Tynell in Bucket A at Dardanelle. He fell and finished 85th at Dardanelle. So I think one of the only sure bets in Bucket A that is really low-owned is Jordan Lee. And, you know, it's hard to shrug and give a reason as such, but he just catches them. So I'm very comfortable with picking him, and he's a safe pick for me in Bucket A. You know, in my backup pick in Bucket A, it's a Brandon Polinick. You know, you guys have all touched on it. He's won here before. In 2015, when they shut off Lake Ontario and you can only fish the river, he finished in 19th. So he still showed that he can catch the smallmouth in the river, even though historically, you know, the big moments we remember him at the St. Lawrence was actually out on Lake Ontario. But he showed that he could do that in 2015. I'd expect the same thing. Plus, he's already got a win. He's already in the Classic. And we know how dangerous he is when he swings for the fences. Back in the days when the winning in was a thing, you know, he made the Classic 2 years in a row based on wins. He won at Bull Shoals in 2012, and he won at the St. Lawrence in 2013. Both of those events punched his ticket to the Classic. He doesn't have to worry about that now. He won the one regular season event this year that punches your ticket. He can swing for another win if he so chooses. And it's very dangerous that he gets to swing away on three smallmouth fisheries in the year. So he's highly owned, but for good reason. So I think what Pete said when he was talking about his Arizona anglers, he went with Clifford Perch. I'm super glad that he chose Clifford Perch because I had my eye on an Arizona angler too. But it's an Arizona angler that he didn't mention or that Coy didn't mention. And my pick is Dean Rojas. I think Dean Rojas, we saw him in the Niagara bracket in 2016 when he faced off in that head-to-head format on the Niagara River. He can catch smallmouth. We always think of him as a frogger and a flipper and a sight fisherman. But he's just as good with that light line and the spinning rod. Plus, we're used to you know, riding off the spawn in these southern lakes when it comes to June, July. But, you know, in the north, they're on bed right now. You know, Lake Champlain has them on bed. I'd imagine that St. Lawrence will be, you know, this week, a good number are starting to get on bed. Lake Oneida, lakes like that up in the north, starting to get some more bedding fish. Probably will be trickling out in late July. But for the ones that are there, feel like they're easy pickings for Dean Rojas if he chooses to target them. But you know, my watch out for pick, I always like to give someone a little different. Sometimes I go with like a favorite, but this time I talked about Dave LaFebvre and Seth Spider as my watch out for picks in Bucket B, strictly for the fact because Mike Iaconelli, Brent Ayler, and Jamie Hartman gobbling up like 65% of Bucket B picks. So not only did I pick Dean Rojas as my pick, who is a lower percentage, but I'm looking at Dave LaFebvre and Seth Spider. They both have low percentages too. And the other guys are, got a lot of percentage to their names, like Ike, Ayler, and Hartman all have 15% or more. But, and that's for good reason. But these guys, well-known steaks in the north as well. So watch out for Dave Lefebvre and Seth Fighter. And Bucket C, I'm going with another Alabama guy. You know, Thomas, you've called me out for my North Carolina bias, and I've avoided North Carolina bias so far to this point. But this Bucket is another Alabama guy. So maybe my St. Lawrence lineup reflects more to Alabama for some reason. But I'm going with Matt Heron. He has had a really odd season. If we want to talk about just roller coaster ride of emotions, he's got 6 Elite Series events under his belt. He's got 2 finishes worse than 90th. He's got 2 finishes in the top 12. And then he's got 2 finishes in the 60s. So he is coupling events and finishes, but he needs to couple a couple more in the top 50 and make checks if he wants to finish it off strong. He's rebounded from two bad events right there. He got a top 12 to start the year, I believe, at Cherokee. And then he got another one at Ross Barnett, but Okeechobee wasn't great for him. And he's had another 90th in there. So if he can avoid a 90th and just stack together a couple 60th plus finishes, he should sneak into that AOI championship and maybe even advance up, you know, going into that event in the top. So Matt Heron, and I think, you know, the reason behind that pick, there's a lot of bays. We think about the St. Lawrence River, and if you look at it on a map, there's a bunch of islands. It's a really long, straight, you know, narrow kind of fishery that, you know, you would imagine it fishes like a river, and it does with a lot of current. There are a lot of bays on the St. Lawrence River that come into play for both smallmouth and largemouth. We mentioned, you know, the other pundits mentioned Greg Hatney, Brandon Card fishing those bays for largemouth. When we were there in 2015, I covered Kevin Ledeau, who fished in bays for smallmouth. So I can still see somebody, you know, catching 20 smallmouth shallow that would be able to make it to the final day probably. But my watch out for pick in Bucket C is Brett Height. He's kind of been, you know, he's the chatterbait guy, as we all know, but, you know, his one of his claim to fame is being so great with finesse tactics. We see him at Kentucky Lake and Bass Fest implementing the Nico rig and kind of a finesse approach before the Nico rig really hit it big. I was thinking about that the other day, and the Nico rig is like, you can't click on a bass fishing website without seeing something about the Nico rig, and it's really taken on some steady, you know, momentum right now. But I remember in 2015 that Brett Height had that going on the ledges of Kentucky Lake and did really well. So I'd expect, you know, somebody who was kind of innovative on a largemouth lake with the Nico rig be able to do just fine with a drop shot and a Nico up north with smallmouth, especially because he's such a good electronic fisherman too. And here we go, Thomas. This pick is just for you.
Mm.
Here's my one North Carolina pick.
Let's have it.
My one North Carolina pick in my bucket picks. But it's not who you think. It's David Fritz. And I've kind of gone pretty conservative with my first 3 picks. Jordan Lee's almost a sure thing. Dean Rojas is. I think Matt Heron fishes well. Angry. David Fritz is kind of my wild card pick this week. I think he started the season so strong, and we were like, kind of taken aback. We're like, man, he can still catch him. You know, he's here to compete. And then the last couple events, when we really thought they would be in his wheelhouse, you know, maybe deep crank and offshore, hasn't worked out for him. But I'd expect him, you know, this isn't a knock on him at all, but we see a Mark Davis, we see David Fritz, we see a lot of these guys who are older who like to sit down on the front. They fish a little slower, but they catch a lot of fish. We saw Mark Davis at Dardanelle sitting down on the front deck, catching a bunch of fish, you know, and was one bite away from winning that event. When we're out on smallmouth fishing, you might want to hop from spot to spot, but I could see David Fritz maximizing the bites he gets, you know, if he's got a school of fish or a kind of a reef that has good smallmouth on it. He's got the patience enough. I think he's going to drift with them. He'll be able to just throw multiple things at him. Plus, I would be hard-pressed to see if he'd get on a crankbait bite up north. We never talk about crankbaits with smallmouth, but I wouldn't be surprised. He's designed the whole Berkeley line of crankbaits. He knows what to do there. So that's my wild card pick. So it can only be a help. I looked at Bernie Schultz as well. Everybody else noted that. I think a couple guys picked him for sure, but I agree. You know, you look at him and One place he's really stood out is at St. Lawrence, which catches people off guard, but, you know, he fishes those bays as well. You know, I think he caught some on a jerkbait last year around those bays. As soon as a little bit of wind gets up, that ultra clear water isn't quite clear. And those more power fishermen, maybe, you know, the Florida guys that you would expect to throw a little bit heavier line than most guys, they can excel in some of those conditions. But Bernie Schultz is my bucket, my watch out for pick in bucket D. And then we take it to bucket E, and I've gotten burned in bucket E just like bucket A. Those two buckets have been my worst buckets of the year, mostly because we have all those guys who are out of place. We don't expect them to be in bucket E, so we're going to pick them because we think they're going to jump back out of their slump, and it hasn't happened for a couple guys. You know, Coy and Pete mentioned, you know, Chad Pipkins hasn't gotten out of his slump. Chris Aldane hasn't. We have guys like Chris Lane, and, you know, we expect them to at some point, but I'm not mad at them, but I'm going to just go off the radar and pick somebody else instead of trying to get my feelings hurt, figuring out which one's going to come in clutch this week. So I'm going with bucket E, Brian Snowden. And one thing I was thinking about the other day is Snowden guides on Table Rock Lake. He fishes in the, you know, the central part of the country, but he has all three species on his home lake, fishes those. You know, and this time of the year, you have to fish that ultra clear Table Rock Lake water if you're offshore, at least, with some finesse tactics to get those schools of fish fired up. And so I'd expect him to be able to implement those same things for smallmouth up north. We saw him do well at Cherokee. He was on Bassmaster Live fishing for smallmouth earlier in the year. I think it'll kind of be a good refresher from, you know, some of the events that might not have been his style, like a Dardanelle. And events in a Ross Barnett, stuff like that. So I expect it to be a breath of fresh air for Snowden, go up to smallmouth country, catch some. You know, he's a central angler, but I'd expect him to do well. Even though his track record might not have been as great there, I think this year you can kind of write it off with how the weather's been in New York. The water's been high for most of the year. They're getting a lot of rain right now up there near Lake Oneida, which is just east of the St. Lawrence and, you know, southeast of the St. Lawrence. So I'd expect some different conditions this time to get up there. And, you know, my watch for picks were Chad Pipkins and Chris Elaine as well. So those guys are all smallmouth hammers in their own right. But sometimes anglers' personalities, Brian Snowden has gone through the ringer of tough years and he's had his great years. He knows not to get down on himself. Some of the younger anglers take it more harshly, and they'll get down on themselves and put more pressure than they maybe need to on themselves. So I'm going to go with a wily veteran, a bucket E. And I threw in a little wild card there. I don't know if we'll talk about this, but my weight prediction. We've had the ranges from high 80s when Polinick won to mid 70s when Evers won. You know, largemouth could factor a little bit in weight. But I think if you're pushing that 80-pound mark, my prediction specifically is 78.5. I think if you got that 19 to 20 pound bag per day, maybe with one day that's a slip up, that should keep you right there in the top five. You know, give or take a pound or two, you could be walking home with a big check.
Ronnie, lots of good information there. Coy, what about your weight prediction? What would you throw out there?
I've watched the 2013 and 2015 events over and over again. I've been fishing a lot at Texoma lately, which has smallmouth. So that's the only way that I can really prepare for any kind of smallmouth anything is by watching those tournaments. And I get excited more and more every time I watch it because they're catching these giant 4 and 5 pound smallmouth. I mean, Palahniuk, when he won it, he had a 23-pound average every day. He had one day that was 21 pounds, but he had a 2-pound penalty for having 6 fish in the live well. So and that was when he won it. He could go all the way up into the lakes. So it's going to play a little bit different when Edwin Evers won it. I think he was averaging like 18, 19 pounds, something like that. Let's see. I have it up here. What did he have? He was, I've got all my notes here too. So he had 77 pounds to win it. So I'm thinking it's going to be in the 80s for sure. Of course, it's going to end with 11 ounces, but my prediction is going to be 82 pounds, 11 ounces.
I've already got my weight selection chosen, and I'll tell you after we hear Pete's, but kind of in that ballpark. Pete, what are you thinking for a 4-day total weight on the winner?
You know, it could be any place from that 77 mark that we had one time to 88. And so I'm going to go right in the middle, 20 pounds a day. That doesn't mean the person will catch 20 pounds a day. They could catch 18 one day, 21 the next, 21 the next, and then 20 the fourth day. But it should be right around even 80 pounds.
You just did like some type of mathematical proof out loud, like it was your job. I'm pretty impressed. You're right. 18, 21, 21, and 20 would average 20 pounds, wouldn't it?
I'm pretty good like that. If you do anything requiring division, multiplication, I might struggle a little, though.
Well, that's interesting. I agree with that. I picked 81-12, so I'm a few ounces shy or just under a pound below Coy with his 11 obsession, whatever that's all about. I still haven't totally understood that. But, look, the weight is something that we really can't forecast. A lot of times, you know, if we go to a Gunnersville, you can assume there's going to be a 23 to 25-pound average to win. And that might even be generous in today's day and age with the lake the way it is. But for the most part, you can guess a pretty consistent weight. But when you get up there, so many factors can change that. And smallmouth are especially finicky. If the water is high and muddy, which I don't think it's going to be, you kind of get up north, being a northern guy myself, usually the weather stabilizes out in about, right about now, late June, into July, those spring rains stop in June. And things get, you know, pretty average for moisture levels, and the water clarity is generally pretty easy to deal with. But if we do get a curveball thrown at us and have a bunch of rain, and the St. Lawrence gets a little muddy, which it can, that could certainly drop the weights down substantially into that, you know, mid-70s, if not even lower if it gets real bad. But we have no idea what it's going to be. If I were to guess, I still think we're going to see little over 20 pound average, and that's not really doing any good math. Now, before we get into my picks, I want to go over something quick. You guys are all picking low owned anglers. I've done the same thing. We're doing that because we want to increase our standing on the leaderboard. We want to climb up. We want to earn some points, and a way to earn points above those who are picking highly owned anglers is to pick guys that don't have as much ownership. But that does not mean in any way, shape, or form that the anglers that have a higher percent of ownership aren't going to do well. In fact, I'm going to go through each bucket here quickly, and this is pretty interesting. If you look at bucket A, Van Dam is the highest owned angler currently at 39.2%, and that's a lot. Looks like number two on that list is Brandon Palnuk, and rightly so. Both those guys are about guaranteed, based on the way they're fishing this year and their history on this type of fishery, they're going to do well there. But there's a few bargains here, and these aren't my picks necessarily, but Ronnie mentioned Jordan Lee, 3.1%. Jason Christie, 1.8%. The guy is not out of the running for Angler of the Year, which we're going to get into shortly. But, you know, you can rest assured that Brandon Palahniuk, Kevin Van Dam, Jacob Wheeler is actually a pretty big bargain, I think, in this bucket as well. Greg Hackney is a big bargain, but those – if you're confident, if you're sitting in that high percentage, let's say you're near the top of the leaderboard, this is when it might be smart. I don't want to say play conservative, and Coy, cut me off if I'm full of it, but you may be wise, and you're in the top 3% of fantasy fishing to pick a Van Dam or a Brandon Palahniuk because they're going to score well. Now, if they don't score well, and those of us who have lower owned anglers like an Edwin Evers, we're going to climb up over you or gain some ground. So bucket A, top two anglers are Van Dam and Palahniuk. Bucket B, this is an interesting one, actually. Iaconelli is very strongly owned at 36.4%. Jamie Hartman at 14%. Seth Fighter at 12%, which is, you know, reasonable. But, you know, the Jamie Hartman thing, we're going to see how it finishes out. We just talked about this in the office today, how Jamie Hartman has had such a great rookie year. And it's the kind of steam that if he can maintain that momentum, he could easily take over the rookie of the year battle, especially going into an area where he's familiar with and is really his homeland of New York there. So Brent Ayler's got 15.6% ownership in bucket B, and he should be. You know, the guy is good in clear water, good with smallmouth bass, could do very well. In fact, he did very well at Mille Lacs at the AOI Championship last year. So the proof is in the pudding. You got Brent Ayler, Michael Iaconelli, Jamie Hartman is a great bet as well. But think about those guys who don't have as much ownership when you're looking to make up ground. And this is all Coy's theory among some of the other players out there, but I'm strictly echoing what I've been taught and haven't cashed in on. We aren't going to go into that, though.
Yeah, well...
go ahead.
So the thing with the percentage is when you're low, like 86%, if you're trying to climb into the 90th percentile, it's a gamble to pick an Edwin Evers mm-hmm. over a Kevin Van Dam. If you want to maintain your position, pick the surefire guys, the guys that are going to score well. Like Ronnie and I talked about a couple of podcasts ago, it only takes like a 30th place finish average to get into that like 1,100 point range. That's not that difficult to do when you're picking guys like Kevin Van Dam, Mike Iaconelli, some of these high owned guys. The risk you run is Kevin Van Dam beating Edwin Evers by a single point, because then all of those people, they scored higher than you, so they're all going to gain more positions on you against the whole field in that bucket. So picking guys like Edwin Evers, it is a gamble, but it's a gamble that's you have to balance. Is it worth it trying to scoot up in that bucket over Kevin Van Dam? Is Edwin Evers going to finish higher than KVD? KVD's done really, really well at St. Lawrence. It's amazing nobody's got him on their roster, but it's 40% owned. So that's pretty tough. But you've got to weigh that risk. Do you want to maintain where you are, or do you want to try to jump up? If Kevin Van Dam beats Edwin Evers, then you've kind of shot yourself in the foot. So it's all about your strategy and where you want to end up at the end of the year.
Well, I would like to not shoot myself in the foot. In fact, the point to back up your point, when I chose Mark Menendez at Dardanelle, and that actually paid off pretty big for me, and that really was my saving grace at that tournament. And even though I didn't score a ton of points, I was able to climb the leaderboard several percentages. So you're right, it's a risk, but, you know, you got a lot on the line here. If you want to win the boat, you got to make a good decision. And so bucket C, and mm-hmm. this is another interesting, they're all really interesting how they set up. Bucket C, the top choice here is Aaron Martins. And boy, he has been so quiet this year. We just haven't seen him do that well. And like we said at the beginning of the show, this is the point in the season where seasons get turned around for anglers and fantasy fishing players. And Aaron Martins, even though he's highly owned, could be a solid pickup there. He does well with a spinning rod. He does well with smallmouth bass. He could very well win this event. I mean, he's been quiet enough long enough that it's easy for us to say that he's due, if being due had anything to do with bass fishing. So he's got 36.2%, and Jacob Prosnick has 18.5%. And that's, look, those are two guys that are going to do very well at this tournament. You can almost guarantee it unless mechanical failure or one of them, you know, gets hurt or something. But Steve Kennedy, 10.8%, and to Pete's selection, he has to make that choice because he's been, embarrassed by Steve, which you kind of deserve for that, but he's in the top three.
Wow.
I know. You'll beat me again. See, there's a little animosity. I should say this. I am behind Pete in the Bassmaster Fantasy League by 30 points. I mean, it's attainable. But right now, you're my target, and so I'm coming after you. I'm going to tell you how I'm going to do that here in a minute. Bucket D, top two guys, Justin Lucas at 18.3% and Jonathan Van Dam at 30.1%. And those are understandable selections. Those are guys that are probably going to do well. Bucket E, 26.6%, belongs to Chris Zaldain. Chad Pippins with 21%. And you'll notice that this bucket is a little more spread out, and I just think that that's because, you know, Pete mentioned early on, it's a tough bucket to choose this year because there's a lot of guys that don't belong and a lot of guys that are struggling this year. So I think it's shooting the moon, and Ronnie has a great idea. I think Brian Snowden is a solid selection. He is an angler that doesn't belong there, but he's quiet, and you don't hear much out of him. But the way this season is going, it would not surprise me one bit to see a guy from Bucket E win again, and it be a guy that is due a win. So, who knows? Let's jump into my selections here. I'm sure they're going to be the best of this group, even though they're somewhat similar to these guys. I, too, went with Edwin Evers in Bucket A, and he still has that level of ownership that I'm comfortable with. It did crawl up. It's at 7.2% as of now, and I think we were back a week ago. He was in the five, so we may have shot ourselves in the foot, guys, by promoting Edwin Evers, but we'll have to keep an eye on that. If it gets too much higher, might have to switch selections if we're allowed to do that as pundits, but who knows. One to look out for in this one, I think, look, Bucket A, is as usual, is full of hammers, and it should be no surprise the guys are where they're at. But looking at Kevin Van Dam and Ott Defoe and Brandon Palahniuk, those guys, you know, are probably going to do pretty well. Ott Defoe, looking at an Angler of the Year title, you know, the guy wants to do well. He's got good momentum, and he's going to keep on that. So he could be a good choice, pretty highly owned. I would suggest Greg Hackney is a dark horse in Bucket A. I think he's due to still clean up from that New York debacle last year. I know he still wants to have a solid finish and another win, and he's not doing bad in AOI. So Hackney would be a great dark horse in Bucket A. Bucket B, I went with my homeboy from Minnesota, Seth Fighter, same as Coy did. And he does have a bit higher ownership, but last year when I started betting on Seth Fighter, it paid off. I know he's hungry, he's talented, he's probably one of the best smallmouth fishermen on the Elite Series, and I hope that that theory holds true in New York. So that's my selection. As mentioned, he posted a 12th place in 2015, and I would expect that or better going up there this year. Dark horse, I got to agree with Pete again. Clifford Perch is a great selection. Jamie Hartman would also be an easy pick. But I look, this is my conundrum, guys. Pete, you had the issue with Steve Kennedy, and when I don't pick Dave Lefebvre, I generally get yelled at also. I'm not picking Dave this time. But I am going to suggest, if you're looking for a low-owned quality selection that's safe and is probably going to do very well, I would say he's probably going to finish in the top 20 pretty easily. Dave Lefebvre is a Great Lakes magician. So I would put him as my dark horse, but there's a lot of good selections there. Clifford Perch is a great one too. So there you go. And I got to agree with Ronnie Moore in Bucket C. Matt Herron has just not had the kind of year you'd expect out of Matt Herron. And I've talked with him, and he has told me in recent years, the last couple, two, 3 years, and you think about how he did on Mille Lacs last year, he is becoming a Southern guy with a smallmouth specialty, a lot like Bernie Schultz. Bernie, great in Florida, great up north. Matt Herron seems to have a lot of those same abilities, and he's going to be my Bucket C selection. He finished 14th in 2015. I think he's going to do well again. He has to do well. And if we're looking at his pattern this year, his great finishes, which are typically been augmented by a terrible finish. He had a couple rough finishes in a row. I don't think he's going to keep that pattern up. So I'm going to stick with Herron and Bucket C, no way around it. Alton Jones is a money choice. I think that's a great selection. Coy has him as his pick. And I would, if I wasn't going to stand by Herron, I'm not going to be loyal. I would definitely go with Alton Jones. I think that's a great selection. He's proven his worth up north.
Mm-hmm.
How many times? You know, you said he stayed late last time, Coy, and really managed to pull that together. Figured out the smallmouth, and he's a dangerous, dangerous angler at this event, especially where he's at in Angler of the Year. He needs to do well. This is a tournament where he could turn that around. You know, we haven't talked about Bill Lowen. He's also a guy that's very accomplished with a spinning rod in his hand and has been awfully quiet this year. He's very consistent, is due a big tournament, same with Brett Height. So I'm in agreement with Brett Height and Ronnie Moore, and considering Steve Kennedy's momentum this year, you cannot argue with that. So my dark horse, though, specifically, is actually going to be Aaron Martins in this bucket, even though he's got a lot of ownership there. So Bucket D, look, guys, so far I have stuck by Justin Lucas, and he has continually climbed up the leaderboard. We're not quite inside the classic cut. He's got three tournaments to make it happen, and I think that he's going to make that move starting at St. Lawrence. He's one of the best with a spinning rod with finesse tactics. And we talked about this a while ago. I think that he was averaging sixth place finish in the Angler of the Year race for his 3 years leading up to this year. So he's having an off year. I don't know why, but he is slowly climbing out of that hole. The highest, one of the highest owned anglers in Bucket D. That's expensive, but I'm going to stick with it. He's paid off. I don't think that's a bad choice at all. So my dark horse here, someone mentioned Brandon Card. I think that's a good selection. Tommy Biffle is a one that's easily overlooked, but he has also done very well in smallmouth lakes. So he's been quiet. He had a pretty good tournament at Dardanelle, I think. I'd have to go back and look at that. He did all right at either there or Ross Barnett, but you know, he's typically due for a top 12 once or twice a year. I could see that happening at both New York Fisheries and maybe even St. Clair when we head over to Michigan. So I'm going to pick Tommy Biffle as a dark horse and a backup. Don't think I'm going to pull from Lucas, though. Bucket E. I had a hard time with this. I may have consumed some whiskey and lost some sleep over making my Bucket E selection, and I've decided to go with Chris Lane. Typically, I'm a big momentum guy. That's one of my number one factors in making my selections, and Chris Lane has no momentum coming into this tournament. But we know he's too good to be in Bucket E. He doesn't belong there. His year is just really weird. But you look at his experience up north, he won, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, Ronnie, reaching back to St. Clair. Didn't he win St. Clair in 2015 or 14?
Yes. He won. No, it was before that. It was like 12. He won it in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, he won it right there at the mouth of Lake Huron.
Yeah.
It was 2013. 82 pounds, yeah.
So, look, I'm going to stand by him in this bucket. I think that, as we talked about, this is the northern swing where seasons get turned around and anglers get back on track. I don't think Chris Lane is probably going to have a shot at the Classic, certainly not the AOI race, but he's going to fish for vengeance. He's going to fish for a paycheck, and I expect to see big things out of him at this tournament, and I really hope I'm right on that because I'd love to throw it in everybody's face the next time we talk. Dark horse is going to be Shaw Grigsby. He's having a tough year. He's done well up north. He's a tremendous sight fisherman. As Ronnie said, there may be some trickle out of smallmouth from beds in the middle of July there. It's probably not very likely that there's a 4-day limit of fish doing that, but he's also very good with a spinning rod in his hand as well. So I think Shaw Grigsby would be a good selection here, but my choice for Bucket E is Chris Lane. So
if I can interject about Shaw Grigsby, if you remember in 2015, day one, he was in the lead with like 25 pounds.
Yeah.
And then day two, he caught two fish for like 3.5 pounds and dropped to 77th. I promise he's not going to make that same mistake this year. If he finds a load of fish, he's not going to – I mean, he went back to the same spot and just expected him to be there. Smallmouth move. He's going to find them if that happens again this year. So that's a smart pick. I like that.
Well, we'll see. Right now it's Chris Lane, and that's my backup, Coy, so I can't claim responsibility for making a wise selection yet. We do have a couple weeks.
Colin.
Yes.
I'd like to interject one thing we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about anglers and their skills, and everybody can do every kind of technique, but I was thinking about it. This will be the first event that the Ultrex will have on the St. Lawrence River, and if you've ever been out on the St. Lawrence River, there is enormous amounts of current.
Mm-hmm.
So just like Mille Lacs showed off the Ultrex last year, it's kind of a tease, and we've seen it play, you know, really useful. It doesn't seem like you can watch a GoPro video without seeing an angler hook up and then tap his spotlight button.
Right.
So I would imagine that out on St. Lawrence in the current, anglers are going to be utilizing that a lot, and that could make the weights bolster, like you guys said. I felt weird picking a lower weight, like 78.5. Everybody else was higher than me. But with the Ultrex play this event, it could end up, you know, these guys could catch a lot more fish than normal. You know, it could get you 3 to 5 fish more per day probably, and over a 4-day event, that could be another 3 to 5 pounds in your live well.
Well, to your point, Ronnie, on the last day of Cherokee, I covered Jacob Wheeler, and he won the event, but he was able to keep on top of schooling smallmouth. And that's something that you're going to need to do. These fish are known for being together in large groups. A lot of times they're not like a largemouth where there might be a school of fish under a half acre chunk of lily pads. You know, these are roamers. They're ledge fish, especially this time of year, if they're off their beds, the Ultrex could be an absolutely key component. I couldn't agree with you more, but to see how that, if you might recall last year at the Mississippi River, when Ott Defoe won on a couple of those days, he was fishing a small roller dam that had a strong amount of current. It wasn't a lot of water, not like a it's a small off backwater for the Mississippi River, but it still had water pouring over at a point where he could not hold his boat still without completely standing on the trolling motor, or in his case, hitting spot lock. So I think you're totally right. That could be the kind of game changer where you can hook a fish, see there's more fish with it, unhook it, drop it in the live well, or release it, but then get your line back down there immediately without having to reposition the boat. That's a great point, Ronnie. I couldn't agree more. It's a sweet, sweet trolling motor, guys. I love it. So we're going to change topics here before we wrap this sucker up. We've talked about this since the very first couple of tournaments. It's been a very interesting year, and the Angler of the Year leaderboard is also one of those things that's shaping up to be very interesting. And I could be wrong. I've been wrong many, many times. Ask my wife. Ask my fantasy fishing pundit colleagues here. I'm wrong often. But if I look at the Angler of the Year top 12, I would say that it is feasible for any of those guys to make a run. Beyond that, it's going to be pushing it. There is a 17-point difference between Todd Faircloth and Randy Howell at this point, which is 12 and 13. Now, does that mean Faircloth has a shot at winning the Angler of the Year title? Well, he did win at St. Clair a couple years ago, so that's a lot of points. You never know. An Ott Defoe could stub his toe, and you don't expect these things to happen, but this is not shaping up to be an Aaron Martin's year where he's run away with it. Right now, I look at the top five, six guys, and I say six, but Van Dam's in seventh. Pete, let's start with you. If you had to pick one guy based on what you're seeing right now, and again, complete conjecture, we don't know anything because it could change, but pick one guy you think has the best shot at winning Angler of the Year.
That's really tough. You know, obviously, Ott is fishing exceptionally well, and so is Jacob Wheeler, and for that matter, so is Brandon Palahniuk. There are two guys, so I'm not going to make a conjecture necessarily, but there are two guys I want to talk about who are in that top 12, one of whom is Kevin Van Dam. He'll be fishing the St. Lawrence for, I believe, the 11th time in his career, the 9th time in his career. And those of you who aren't old like me may not remember, but Kevin Van Dam's first BASS tournament was September of 1987, so 30 years ago, and it was at the St. Lawrence.
Really?
And he finished 110th out of 300 anglers in that tournament. But since that time, he's never missed the money. He has two wins. He has a third-place finish, an 11th-place finish, a 13th, a 14th, and a 41st. So he's a hammer any place we go, but I don't think anyone would be surprised if he jumped out of 7th place and were to take the Angler of the Year award, especially with them heading north. You know, the one other guy I want to talk about in the top, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you on that. He's the kind of guy that is like a shark. When he smells blood in the water, smells a win, he's dangerous. So carry on.
One of the other guys in the top seven that I really want to talk about is someone we haven't talked about much this year, and I call him the sandwich guy, because you have in first, second, and third, you have Ott Defoe, Jacob Wheeler, Brandon Palahniuk. Three young guys who are exceptional anglers. They've all won, but they haven't tasted that Angler of the Year yet. And then in fifth, sixth, and seventh, you have guys who I consider kind of the old and crusty guys. Well, they're not necessarily old, and they're not necessarily crusty all the time. But Mark Davis, Jason Christie, and Kevin Van Dam are sort of the unflappable veterans. And in between is a guy in fourth place, Casey Ashley, one of Ronnie's Carolina boys. We haven't talked about him much this year, and but for a Cherokee stumble, he's had an awesome year. He finished fourth at Toledo Bend. He has two near misses to making the top 12 at Dardanelle and Rayburn. And I'm surprised we haven't talked about him because he's had such a good year, but Casey's kind of one of those guys who always seems to fly under the radar. And I have a theory. I was thinking about it today, and Ronnie, you'll have to fill me in because you're our cheer wine drinker in the crowd. And I'm originally from north of the Mason-Dixon line, so I can say this, but the Carolina guys kind of fish like Yankees. They're all good in clear water situations. They're good sort of skipping a jig around docks, or you look at Hank Cherry is good at throwing a jerk bait. And I kind of think of those, to me, Lake Norman in a lot of ways sets up like a northern lake, and Hartwell does to some extent as well. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Casey Ashley, who already has a major title under his belt, making a push for Angler of the Year with very little attention on him as we head into this northern swing.
That is a great observation. Go ahead, Ronnie.
I'd have to agree. I grew up on Lake Norman, and it used to be one of those, catch 12 pounds of largemouth, and you would be sitting in the top five. Well, now you have to catch 15 to 16 to 17 pounds of spotted bass. So it does more now so than in the past, act like a northern fishery when it comes to the way smallmouth react compared to the way spotted bass react. So that's why I pick them. Now Pete's on my side. I understand it. Now I have a run at Carolina guy.
Oh, boy. There's so much love here. Well, while you're at it, Ronnie, who is your one pick on the current Angler of the Year list that's going to have a shot?
guys, I've been waiting, and I've been really excited about it. The guy, you know, I created a little fantasy fishing league that's different format than ours, where we pick five anglers. With a couple buddies, we had to pick the specific winner of every single event this year, and kind of like a golf format, you know, if your guy finishes high in the tournament, that's how many points you get, so on and so forth. Well, at the end of the thing, we picked our angler of the year. And before anyone had made a cast this season, I picked Brandon Polinick. So I was super excited for him to get a top 12 at the beginning of the year. And then he got a 100th place finish or worse at Okeechobee, and I was super bummed. But now he's reeled off. He's got five top 20s this year. One of those is a win, and he's got one 100th place finish. So five top 20s out of six events. Everyone in the world is picking that. So I'd have to say the momentum's on his side. Ott Defoe is great at everywhere we go. Such a skilled angler. Jacob Wheeler's the same way. But, man, when you think about smallmouth fishing, you think about Pipkins, Jonathan Van Dam, some of those guys that are specific smallmouth hammers. Well, Brandon Pollock's in that group. So I'm super stoked for the final couple of events this year. I think that my early season or beginning of the year prediction of Brandon Pollock is in a perfect place. He's charged up the board. He's only 14 points behind.
Well, let's not talk too loud about him. He might hear us. He doesn't want to hear where he stands, remember.
Well, that's what's funny. I'm wondering how he'll react. Obviously, you won't know where you are in Angler of the Year points unless they're giving you a $1,000 check after each event for being the Toyota Angler of the Year leader. So if he starts getting $1,000 checks, he'll pretty much know exactly where he's at standing.
That's
so,
right.
But I get the whole premise behind not knowing, because he talked about it in a video that'll be on Bassmaster.com about if you know where you're at, let's just say you're 30th or 40th in points, you need a top 30 finish, that's what you're going to shoot for, and you're never going to achieve that. But no matter if you're 80th, 40th, first, if you always are practicing for the win and always shooting as high as you can go, then you're more times than not, you'll end up there. That's probably why he's got five top 20s this year. He's always one of those guys focusing on that, because if you lower your standard, you know, all the guys who are check chasers, as we call them, they always barely miss the check. And they're always like the talk of the town, like, man, you missed the check again, barely. It's because they were shooting for a check and they barely came up short. If you shoot for the win, more times than not, you could probably come up in the top 12. So I think that that's a good formula for at least Polinick. Not every angler can fish that way, but I like what he's doing, especially going into his wheelhouse, three events coming up.
Well, that's some brilliant insight from the Godfather. I didn't ever think I'd say brilliant and Ronnie Moore in the same sentence, but there you have it. Good stuff, Ronnie. Coy, surely you've thought about this with all your research.
Absolutely. So Ott Defoe, he's fishing like a madman right now. He's fishing very well. He's consistent. But like everything, it's a lot harder to stay in first than to get to first, in my opinion. So there's a couple of guys chasing Ott Defoe that it's going to make it really hard for him to hold on to that number one spot. And does he have the scraps to be able to put together Angler of the Year? Absolutely. But there's some guys who are hungry behind him. Brandon Pollinick is a great example. Man, all the way down into seventh place, eighth place, Kim Van Dam is not out of it. He's 30 points behind. Like, that's not that big of a gap to close, especially with some of these guys being sticks in the northern lakes. So the guy that I've got my eye on, though, is Jacob Wheeler. He is trying to become the next GOAT of bass fishing. He is trying to be the next Kim Van Dam type. I mean, he's trying to check off all of these major titles. He's won Horsewood Cup. He has won lots of events with Bass, with FLW. He's constantly in the top end. This guy is looking to check off the Angler of the Year title with Bassmaster. And I cannot imagine a world where that's not the next thing he wants. He's won Bass Fest. He's won a standard Elite Series event now with Cherokee. That's his target. He can't win a Classic till next year. What else is he going to do? He's one of those guys, he's looking for those trophies to put on the shelf. He's not looking for checks. And he's got the eye, his eye on the Angler of the Year title. I promise you that. And he's probably not like Brandon Palahniuk, where he doesn't want to know where he stands. He probably is thinking, he's very calculated. And I can just see him, you know, what do I need in order to step up in the Angler of the Year points? What am I going to need to be safe? And that's what he's going to be shooting for. Look for him to be at or near the top by the end of this. He's done really well in Northern tournaments. Lots and lots of good finishes in Northern Opens, FLW tournaments. He's done very well in smallmouth waters. So I look for him to be, I'll say it, I think he's probably going to be Angler of the Year this year just because he's got that drive and he wants to check it off so bad.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is some great insight from all three of you guys, and we've picked the top or three of the top four, and my selection is going to be Ott Defoe. And the reason I say that is he's been, as we say, fishing out of his mind this year. And as we've seen in years past, they have to typically, if you're going to win Angler of the Year, you have to make a run for it by the middle of the season. And you're going to have so many top 12 finishes. I believe last year, Gerald Swindle had, Ronnie, you'll know this, six or seven top 12s where it was just – six. I mean, you got to be consistently in the top 12, and Defoe has been there. It is really hard to argue, and I know we've joked about this. We need to disagree a little bit more, but I think every one of those guys could be really in hot contention for AOI. It's easy to look past Mark Davis, but he did really well last time at the St. Lawrence, or one of the more recent times. He's good up north. Christy was in such a commanding position earlier in the year. It wouldn't take much for these guys to move up the leaderboard, but it's going to take Ott Defoe stumbling. It's going to take him having a bad tournament, a couple bad tournaments he can't afford. So if he's going to make a run for it, his consistency is going to have to stay the same. I think he's fishing as well as he has in his career, getting his first official Elite Series win last year. He's tasted that victory, tasted that success. I think that it would be a good time for him to win one of these Northern events and take home the Angler of the Year title, which is considered by all of the anglers I've spoken to as the most respected title you can win. Yeah, the Classic is important. It's a big deal. Makes your career. But among anglers, Angler of the Year is a very, very highly respected title. So, gentlemen, my selection, Ott Defoe. It's easy for me to stay on top, and I'm just hoping for the best if he continues to do well. And if not, I'm sure you'll all throw it in my face down the road, which I guess makes that a lot of fun. But, hey, this has been a lot of fun. We've talked about a lot of stuff going on with a single event and how the venue change offers the opportunity for any angler to change their season around, and this is the type of place where the smallmouth anglers are going to have the chance to make up some ground that maybe they had lost during the regular season in Southern waters. And I think that we're going to see some pretty exciting tournaments wrapping up the season here. We've got three to go in the regular season. That is going to be St. Lawrence River sliding east a little bit to fish Lake Champlain. Then we're going to go back west again to Detroit for St. Clair. And you'll remember the last time we went to St. Clair, Todd Faircloth won. And he's in 12th place for Angler of the Year. So he's not out of this either, especially with the familiar water coming up. And then we'll go to AOY, Angler of the Year in Minnesota, Mille Lacs, and then the Classic Bracket Challenge will be on Lake Pekegama out of Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Very much looking forward to that time of year. Wonderful, wonderful to head back to my homeland. Hey, from Koi Greathouse, Ronnie Moore and Pete Robbins, thanks for being with us on the most recent episode, episode seven of Inside Bassmaster. This has been Thomas Allen. Thanks for checking in, and we'll catch you here next time in between. Right in the middle, smack dab, Northern New York. We're going to have another show coming to you live from St. Lawrence River. So stay tuned. This has been Inside Bassmaster.